Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, July 18th. I was told I only had about 4 weeks left to live. Organ donation gives new life to Midland's Sally Blair. The story was written by Kesley Salinas. Sally Blair was told she only had about 4 weeks to live when she was finally placed on the list to receive a life-saving organ donation. Blair, a 58-year-old Odessa native, was diagnosed with primary biliary cholangitis, previously called primary biliary cirrhosis, an autoimmune disease in which the bile ducts are inflamed and slowly destroyed. Bile is a fluid made in the liver that helps with digestion. Quote, "My body was attacking my liver," said Blair. "I was experiencing edema," end quote. Edema is the medical term for swelling caused by fluid trapped in the body's tissues. It commonly affects feet, ankles, and legs, but can also be seen in the face, hands, and abdomen. Blair lost her ability to drive because of frequent blackouts. She was a social worker for hospice in the emergency room and was forced to retire early. Quote, "I was sick for nearly 10 years," Blair said. "I didn't understand the process. I was angry and frustrated that I couldn't get on the list to receive a transplant," end quote. Blair went to her doctor at Baylor White and Scott in Dallas to get answers. Quote, "I presented myself to Dr. Modi, a transplant doctor, to ask him why," Blair said. "I told him I need to know what I'm dealing with," end quote. Blair learned about the Muddle for End-Stage Liver Disease, or MELD for short, a numerical scale ranging from 6 to 40 to determine how urgency candidates will need a liver transplant within the next 3 months. According to the University of Florida, MELD is determined through several lab tests on internal normalized ratio, creatine, bilirubin, and serum sodium. The higher the MELD score, the more likely a candidate will need a transplant. Blair's doctor told her that her MELD score needed to be above 21 to be placed on the transplant list. Although she was very sick, her MELD score was only 10. Quote, "My doctor said my MELD score wasn't high enough to get on the transplant list," Blair said. "It was rough hearing that when you're already severely sick," end quote. Blair's health suddenly took a turn. Quote, "My MELD score went from 10 to 21 overnight," Blair said. However, that didn't mean she would get her much-needed transplant anytime soon. Blair waited 2 to 3 months to try to get on the list, and her MELD score crept up to 27. Quote, "I was told I only had about 4 weeks left to live," Blair said. "I went to the top of the transplant list on a Saturday night, and by Sunday morning I was in the operating room," end quote. The organ donation saved Blair's life. Quote, "Thankfully, I had family there by my side supporting me and holding my hand," Blair said. She later moved to Midland from Dallas to be closer to her family. After her transplant, Blair experienced high blood pressure, but it stabilized after 4 years. She also noticed other major health changes after her surgery. Quote, "I had a tendency toward depression since I was 14 years old," Blair said. "After my transplant, I noticed that my medications help me better," end quote. Blair added that she felt called to volunteer at Southwest Transplant Alliance, or STA, a nonprofit organization that is dedicated to fulfilling the gifts of organ and tissue donation to give back and educate the public about organ donations. Quote, "It's important to register your decision to donate early," Blair said. "Doing it before you're on the gurney means that your family doesn't have to make that tough decision," end quote. The importance of organ donation. Quote, "One person saying yes can save 8 lives and improve the lives of 75 others," said JoBeth Stewart, a senior organ recovery coordinator at STA. Quote, "There are over 100,000 people on the waiting list, and about 10,000 of those are Texans," end quote. Before Stewart joined the STA team, she was already familiar with organ donations because her sister received a kidney from a living donor. Stewart's husband was also a recipient of a liver and kidney transplant. Quote, "I'm very passionate about donation and what it can do not just for the people we serve, but for their families," Stewart said. STA works with families and hospitals during the donation process. Quote, "We work with families on their toughest days," Stewart said. "I would like people to know that donation really gives people a second chance at life, and for children and pediatric patients, it's their only chance at life," end quote. Stewart also wanted to address some of the myths that surround donations. The first and most common myth is that donors will not be saved in emergencies. Quote, "As a critical care nurse, we've never asked to see a driver's license to see if they have a heart, indicating being a registered donor," Stewart said. "That's not how it works. Every emergency room physician, critical care doctor, surgeon, and nurse treat everyone coming through those doors equally," end quote. She added that having the registered donor heart on your driver's license doesn't affect the care the patient will receive. Another myth is deceased donors being unable to have a viewing and funeral. Quote, "We are respectful with our donors and mindful," Stewart said. "Nobody would know that a donation took place if they didn't want them to know," end quote. Stewart added that another myth she hears is regarding some religions not allowing organ donation. Quote, "In all major religions, they support and view donation as the most charitable thing you can do," Stewart said. "We encourage people to talk to their leaders about it," end quote. Stewart said that STA helps unite grieving with healing. She added that many times families on both the donor side and the recipient side write letters to each other after the gift of donation is completed. According to Stewart, STA covers all costs associated with donation. She said that the organization also works closely with families so that they're able to make informed decisions regarding organ and tissue donations. Quote, "It's a tough job to be in, but knowing that somebody is going to get that call that they've been waiting for helps you keep going," said Stewart. "We tell families that whether their loved ones made that choice or they had the power to make that choice, it can leave a lasting legacy for that person, their family, and people on the waiting list," end quote. Midland Airport marks milestone. In June, a record 70,340 passengers boarded planes. The story was written by Trevor Hawes, editorial director. Airport boardings have hit a new milestone thanks to United Airlines. In June, 70,340 passengers boarded planes at Midland International Air and Spaceport, a 14% increase over the June 2023 number, and the first time MIF has seen passengers eclipse the 70,000 mark, according to the City of Midland. The city in May reported a total of 67,684 passengers. So where did the June increase come from? In looking at airline-by-airline data, United Airlines had 16,407 passengers, a nearly 29% increase over the May count of 12,722. That's 3,685 more passengers in just 1 month. United shuttles passengers to Bush Intercontinental and Denver International. Delta Airlines, which only flies to Austin Bergstrom International, saw 4,040 travelers in June, a 5% increase month over month. American Eagle saw a 2% increase in passengers, with 17,720 flying to either Dallas-Fort Worth International or Phoenix Sky Harbor. Not all numbers were higher. Southwest Airlines, the busiest carrier at MAF, was down just more than 1% to 33,408. Southwest has five destinations: Austin Bergstrom, Hobby Airport in Houston, Love Field in Dallas, Denver International, and Harry Reid International in Las Vegas. Year-to-date, MAF has seen 545,674 boardings, a 12% increase over the 485,099 it had last year at this time. Parking revenues have also increased. The city reported $744,000 in net parking revenues for June, a 3% increase month over month, and a 17% increase year over year. This fiscal year, parking sales have tallied $6 million. A total of 762,000 gallons of fuel were sold in June, for a total of just over 6 million gallons this year. Summer strife. Midland resident, age 65, with epilepsy, faces health risks due to broken AC in apartment. The story was written by B.K. Richter. Trevor Money lives with epilepsy, but high heat in a publicly subsidized apartment has put his life in danger. For the 65-year-old Midland resident living in Hillcrest Manor Apartments, which is owned by the City of Midland Housing Authority, Money says that his seizures are made worse by the lack of consistent air conditioning in his unit. Money said the lack of proper air conditioning has been an ongoing issue since September 2023. In a letter sent to Roberta Reap, a manager with the Hillcrest Manor Apartments, Money wrote that the central heating and air conditioning in his apartment was broken and non-functional. Quote, "Due to the high temperatures in Midland, the failure of the central air conditioning unit, which has resulted in ambient temperatures in my apartment reaching, at times, 83 degrees Fahrenheit, is not just an inconvenience, but represents a severe compromise to my existing health condition, of which you are aware, namely chronic epilepsy," Money wrote. In speaking with the Reporter-Telegram on Tuesday, Teresa Thompson-Davis, executive director of the Housing Authority, said the central air unit in Money's apartment is fully functional. Money told the Reporter-Telegram that air conditioning is only operational intermittently, with the blower having gone out most recently in the early morning hours on Wednesday. In a formal letter from the Housing Authority to Money, dated July 11, 2024, and shared with the Reporter-Telegram, the Housing Authority informed him that several agencies have been notified of the HVAC failure. quote, "The health department, certified air-conditioned technician, maintenance staff, and management have been to your unit on several occasions and found the air-conditioned unit cool properly," Davis wrote. "The housing authority has met requirements to make necessary repairs," end quote. The Reporter-Telegram could not independently verify either claim, though the paper learned from Davis on Wednesday morning that a technician will again be sent to check on Money's HVAC unit soon. While Money maintains that his medication regimen helps with his condition, it's only part of an overall treatment plan that includes lifestyle changes, such as regular and sustained REM sleep at night, as well as the avoidance of overly stressful situations. Money said that due to the failure of the HVAC system, his overall sleep has been severely compromised. According to the Epilepsy Foundation website, quote, "Seizures are very sensitive to sleep patterns. Some people have their first and only seizures after an all-nighter at college or after not sleeping well for long periods. If you have epilepsy, lack of good sleep makes most people more likely to have seizures. It can even increase the intensity and length of seizures. Some forms of epilepsy are especially prone to sleep problems," end quote. Money said he has had 2 emergency room visits to both Midland Memorial Hospital in Midland and Medical Center Hospital in Odessa to be rehydrated because of heat in his apartment. Quote, "The emotional stress of this also aggravates my existing epilepsy condition," he said during a phone interview with the Reporter-Telegram. Money doesn't argue that some repairs have been made. However, he says that a window air conditioning unit installed when his HVAC was broken is also defective in that the thermostat control that governs the auto shutoff of the unit does not function correctly. Quote, "The unit runs 24/7, showing a temperature of 75 degrees Fahrenheit when the room temperature is as low as 71 degrees Fahrenheit," he said. Money said that as the summer heat persists, his health condition will only escalate. Quote, "The fact that I am not getting sleep is detrimental to my health," he said. "One morning, I had a major seizure and I smashed through a coffee table, injuring my face and causing injuries to my arm. The apartment complex is comprised solely of the elderly and disabled. We are viewed as disposable," end quote. Texas Property Code in Section 92.052 says it's the landlord's duty to repair or remedy. A landlord shall make a diligent effort to repair or remedy a condition if the tenant specifies the condition in a notice to the person to whom or to the place where rent is normally paid. The tenant is not delinquent in the payment of rent at the time notice is given. The condition materially affects the physical health or safety of an ordinary tenant. We have the funds available to make the repairs that are needed, dependent on the technician's recommendation, Davis told the Reporter-Telegram on Wednesday. Money is concerned that his ongoing seizures will eventually lead to a much more serious health situation, such as a coma. Quote, "My neurologist is concerned," Money added. "My sleep monitor shows how much sleep that I am receiving every night," end quote. For Money, an apartment located near his church and a dog park are part of the reasons why he stays. Quote, "I want to be close to my church," he said, "and I take my service dog, Lily, to the park whenever I am able." Money also realizes that if he were able to move, he would. quote, "I have been in West Texas since 2010. If I had a way to transfer my property, I would hightail it out of here," he said.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, July 18th. Stoker running for at-large council seat. Longtime Odessa volunteer said Odessa ready for change. Longtime Odessan Craig Stoker wants to take his volunteer spirit to the next level by running for the at-large city council seat in Odessa. "Now is the perfect time for him," he said, as he has settled well into his job as executive director of Odessa's Meals on Wheels, and said he has the time to devote to making the city he loves better. He officially announced his candidacy at 10 a.m. today at downtown Odessa's Copper Rose building. "We have the unique opportunity to heal the hurt and division in our community," he said. "I am asking for you to vote for the future of Odessa and elect me as your next Odessa City Council member at large." He said the national political nastiness is alive and well in Odessa, but he believes the March elections here send a loud message, with numerous incumbents being shown the door by mostly first-time challengers. "The meanness and the nastiness are part of the strategy because it keeps good people from running," he said. "But the community spoke, and the message was, we are done with it, we're tired of it." He said the meanness is not productive and is not who Odessa is. "When you talk about Odessa, one of the top answers to what do you like about Odessa is always the people," he said. "The people are wonderful and welcoming and will befriend you. Our political climate has not reflected that." Stoker said he plans to ignore any nastiness, focus on the positive, and moving Odessa forward. He will face incumbent at-large councilperson Denise Swanner in November. Swanner is in her first term, which has been characterized by her almost always voting with Councilman Mark Mata and Mayor Javier Hoven. Both Swanner and Hoven lost their bids in March for local Republican Party precinct chair seats in what was a particularly nasty campaign countywide. The squad, as city employees have often referred to them, have been at the center of several issues, including fake profiles on Facebook used to attack anyone who disagrees with them. Swanner was called out last year for posting that she had met one of those fake profiles, a person named Josiah Vargas, and that he had bought her lunch and she had just met him. She backed off of that claim when others on Facebook called her out because that profile was phony. She later tried to clarify that she didn't mean she had met him in person, but that she was told he paid for her lunch. When questioned further by a constituent, she said, "I never pay for my own lunch." Stoker doesn't want the drama, but said he is ready if the attacks turn ugly in the coming months. He ran for city council against Dieter White in 2018 and lost. "I have always said that was the last nice election we had," he said. He said he did not know White at the time, but they were always congenial during the race, and after she won, she appointed him to some boards. "I consider her a friend, and she is my neighbor," he added. Stoker said he doesn't plan any attacks of his own and said he simply thinks his opponent and much of the rest of the council have missed opportunities to improve Odessa. Recent issues such as broken water lines and problems with trash pickup due to broken trucks should be top priorities of council members. He said the water issue has been kicked down the road too many times. Stoker becomes emotional when talking about needy Odessans. He said he sees the neediest of the needy with his work on Meals on Wheels. "Our clients have these immediate needs, and we need to be able to serve them today. And I feel like as a city, we need to put some urgency behind the water and things like trash pickup, he said. He said water issues need to be addressed and federal and state grants need to be sought out to help pay for the many overhauls needed for the water system here. He said many will say raise taxes or fees and will detail to Odessans that they share that their share of paying for that would cost less than a Starbucks coffee each week. But you know what? Many people here don't have Starbucks money to pay extra for repairing what has been neglected, he added. He said what has been lost on many current elected officials is that the perception is that they are simply not taking care of the important issues like water and roads. Instead, he said, too many times the city's Facebook page is used to prop up elected officials with photo ops while important issues are left to languish. People expect good water to come out when they turn on the faucet, he said. The perception of the city is nothing has been done, he said. Why has nothing been fixed? Why are the pipes still bursting? Is it too much of, look over here at the great things we are doing, but don't pay attention over there? I know things move at a glacial pace in government, but there are still things that could have been done. He bemoans the misinformation that often comes out of the city and also the mass exodus of longtime employees with institutional knowledge that has left with them. He pointed to trash trucks ordered under this administration that won't be here until 2026. Some new trucks ordered by the previous administration are apparently trickling in. Stoker questioned why the city hasn't hired an independent contractor to come in and provide some relief. The perception, again, is that the ball has been dropped or something hasn't been paid attention to. Always shift the blame with, it's not our fault, but always blame the previous administration. Water, water. He said some blame on previous administration holds a little bit of water with him. No one went out and broke the water pipe. But we go back to that whole could, would, should have, and it's a too little, too late, he said, in talks in recent weeks of up to $25 million being allocated to local water issues. Why the urgency now, 3 months before an election, when these folks have had the majority of the city council for 2 years? According to records obtained under the Texas Public Information Act, the current city council has budgeted millions of dollars to repair or replace some of the city's 500 miles of water lines and valves, yet only a small percentage of it has actually been spent during the last 4 years. In 2021, $2.7 million was budgeted and $1.7 million was spent. It got worse in 2022. $3.7 million was budgeted and roughly $1.78 million was spent. Last year, $4 million was budgeted and $1.75 million was spent. The city sat on millions of dollars during those years and water lines were breaking left and right. In fact, 263 water lines broke from 2021 to 2023 for an average of 88 per year. This year, from January 1st through June 30th, 92 water lines broke in the city. During the last year, Odessa lost 4.1 million gallons of water due to water line breaks, and so far this year, Odessa has lost 6.1 million gallons. On Tuesday, the council voted to allocate the $25 million to water. Stoker said he wonders why plans were not followed to repair lines and valves in the last several years. You can get a lot more done when you don't care who gets credit for the idea, he said. I think there is a lot of that in our city government right now, having to make sure it is the right person's idea or else it's a bad idea. Lifelong Odessan and attorney Cal Hendrick is challenging Odessa Mayor Javier Hoven. Both Hendrick and Stoker have said they want the city to get back on track and take care of water, sewer, trash, fire, police, and infrastructure both have said social issues are not on the list of priorities. Stoker said he doesn't begrudge elected officials the time to do things that are important to them. But we have to always ask ourselves, is what we are spending our time on serving the entire population of Odessa? Stoker said elected officials must avoid doing things to simply shine their own crown. He looks forward to the race and said he wants to highlight nonprofits, servant leadership, and volunteering in addition to council duties. He said his council priorities, if elected, will be water, road, trash, and urging Odessans to take pride in their city. Let's partner up and help each other, even just pick up the trash. He hopes for better voter turnout and thinks many residents don't participate because they feel marginalized. The apathy is real, he said. To me, it is because they are tired of it, the mudslinging and rumors and outright lies and fake profiles. He recalled the March elections and the grassroots groundswell, led then by Odessan Ronnie Lewis, who was elected as a local Republican Party precinct chair. I'm curious to see what's going to happen, Stoker said, of the election in November. I really don't want this to be a run against Denise. I want this to be a run for Odessa, he said. I want us to get back to work. I want to stop the division. Fair campaigning. Stoker said the packet to run for city council is large and includes one form called the Fairness in Campaigning Act. He signed the form and added, when he turned in his paperwork, the city secretary told him it was optional. And so there's not even an attempt by the city to say, hey, here's an opportunity to bring some congeniality back to these elections and say, listen, I'm not going to attack you personally. I'm not going to come after you about your personal life. I'm going to stick to this issue. I'm going to stick to your record. I hope the rest of the candidates in the election sign it. He even hopes all candidates will go one step further and vow not to use third parties like fake news sites to attack candidates. We can work on bringing back civility to our community and a spirit of togetherness and working together, he said. We have so many great things to show, and we need a hard look at what a city council does. The bottom line is it's nonpartisan. The roads don't care whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. The trash doesn't care. The water pipes 2 weeks ago didn't care. I believe we have opportunities to find solutions to these problems without going in and issuing massive amounts of debt. PSP invests $10 million toward Ector County ISD CTE building. The Permian Strategic Partnership, PSP, Wednesday announced a $10 million investment in the Ector County Independent School District Career and Technical Education Center. Together with Ector County's successful school bond and land generously donated by Grow Odessa, this investment will help fund the construction of the state-of-the-art building and expand current course offerings. ECISD hopes to secure an additional $13 million in funding to enhance the facility beyond the current design. The PSP believes in the power of education to transform lives and communities. Tracy Bentley, president and CEO of PSP, said in a news release, by equipping students with the skills and knowledge to thrive in today's competitive job market, we are not only supporting their future success, but also contributing to the economic vitality of our region. We are committed to supporting ECISD and Dr. Murray in their ongoing fundraising efforts to ensure the successful completion of this project. The CTE program at ECISD provides students with a wide range of pathways, preparing them for successful careers in 30 high-demand, high-wage fields. The new CTE facility is scheduled to open in 2027, enabling ECISD to offer even more specialized training and state-of-the-art resources. The enhanced campus will feature cutting-edge technology and equipment, providing students with hands-on experience in fields such as energy, healthcare, welding, automotive collision, and culinary arts. This generous contribution from the Permian Strategic Partnership will have a lasting impact on our students and our community, stated ECISD Superintendent Dr. Scott Murray. The CTE building will offer world-class opportunities for our students to gain the practical skills and certifications that will set them on a path to success. The Permian Strategic Partnership, PSP, a coalition of 30 leading energy companies and universities, remains dedicated to addressing critical community needs through strategic investments in education. This investment underscores PSP's ongoing commitment to enhancing educational opportunities and workforce development to create a brighter future for the Permian Basin. Pfluger introduces bill to end overregulation. Congressman August Pfluger, Texas 11, unveiled groundbreaking legislation aimed at restoring accountability and transparency to federal regulatory processes. Titled the Returning the Power to the People Act of 2024, this comprehensive bill comes after the landmark Supreme Court decision on Chevron deference and marks a decisive step toward curtailing the expansive reach of federal agencies and reasserting Congress's role in legislative interpretation. Unelected bureaucrats have exploited the Chevron deference doctrine to impose onerous regulations that hinder American businesses and stifle economic growth. Overruling Chevron is crucial for the Permian Basin and beyond. My legislation provides clarity while we unravel the multitude of regulations built upon this flawed principle. It's time to rein in the federal regulatory state, Pfluger said in a news release, addressing the need for immediate action. Pfluger's legislation represents a pivotal effort to restore congressional oversight and rein in the unchecked growth of federal bureaucracy. By overturning Chevron deference and promoting clarity and fairness in regulatory practices, the Returning the Power to the People Act of 2024 aims to empower American businesses and uphold the rule of law. TxDOT, speeding kills, slow down, and save lives. The telltale red and blue lights in a driver's rearview mirror can inspire shame and guilt, but those feelings don't come close to the guilt speeding drivers feel after killing or injuring someone, or the pain a family feels when someone dies in a crash. Speeding can kill, and someone is always left behind to deal with the painful aftermath. Speed was a factor in more than 160,000 traffic crashes in Texas last year, and 1,456 people were killed in speed-related crashes. That's a third of all traffic deaths in Texas. Lanisa Den knows how lives can be forever changed when someone makes the choice to drive at an unsafe speed. In 2020, a young man driving twice the speed limit in Lubbock crashed into her mother's car as she tried to make a left turn. Her mother, June Linker, died at the scene. "If that driver would have obeyed the law, my mother might still be here today," said Dan. "I hope other drivers will hear my story and protect their fellow Texans by slowing down and avoiding making the same mistake." Tragic deaths like that of Den's mother are why TxDOT is partnering with law enforcement to launch its summer Be Safe, Drive Smart campaign and encourage motorists to slow down. "Speeding is one of the deadliest problems on our roads," TxDOT Executive Director Mark Williams said. "Getting to the office, home, or wherever you're going a few minutes faster isn't worth putting your life or the lives of others at risk." Speeding is not only dangerous, it can also be costly. The Be Saved, Drive Smart campaign coincides with Operation Slowdown, a statewide high-visibility speed limit enforcement period. From July 19th through August 4th, Texas law enforcement agencies will step up their efforts to get drivers to slow down or pay up. Be safe, drive smart means more than following the speed limit. Follow these tips to keep yourself and others safe and avoid a ticket. Match your speed to road conditions such as bad weather or driving through a work zone. Slow down and allow for more distance to stop when traffic is heavy or roads are slick. Watch for road signs alerting you to reduced speed limits ahead. TxDOT actively monitors roadways throughout the state to identify patterns that may help implement additional safety measures to prevent speeding. Working together, TxDOT, law enforcement, and drivers can save lives on Texas roads. Be Safe, Drive Smart messages will be broadcast this month on TV, radio, billboards, gas pumps, theater screens, and social media. TxDOT is also hosting community events featuring an interactive exhibit of safety quizzes and video displays at select Buc-ee's locations along major travel corridors. November 7, 2000 was the last deathless day on Texas roadways. Obituaries. Samuel Henderson. Samuel Floyd Sonny Henderson passed from this life July 12th. He was a big man who lived a big life. Sonny was born at Headley Hospital on March 5, 1938. A native Odessan from a pioneering ranching family, he was the grandson of Marvin F. and Lois Henderson. Visitation will be held Tuesday, July 23rd from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Wednesday, July 24th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home Chapel with Reverend John Wamsley officiating. A burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home in Odessa. Sue Bradford Anthony. Sue B. Anthony, 77, passed away on Saturday, June 8th in Austin after a battle with metastatic breast cancer. Sue was born in Alpine on October 28, 1946. A private family burial is to be held in Alpine at the Elm Grove Cemetery on September 28th. A public celebration of life for Sue is planned for the same day in Alpine. Time to be announced. Paul Edward Burnett Jr. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Paul Edward Burnett Jr., 68, of Odessa, died Tuesday, July 9th in Odessa. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Ashley Nicole Camden Kinsey. Ashley Nicole Kinsey Camden, 22, of Odessa, died Thursday, July 11th in Lubbock. Memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. Visitation, July 21st, at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Mary Lois Gilliam Evans. Mary Lois Evans Gilliam passed away peacefully on July 11th at the age of 94 in Odessa. Surrounded by family, funeral service will be held at 3 p.m. on Monday, July 15th at Comanche Funeral Home with Bobby Stutville officiating. Burial will follow at the Downing Cemetery. Barbara Ann Ney Debner. Barbara Ann Ney Nee Debner of Buddha fell asleep in the Lord on July 8th. She was a gift to all who knew her and will be profoundly missed. Barbara was born on October 4th, 1953 in Fort Polk, Vernon Parish, Louisiana, to Donald and Helen Debner. Immigration is taking center stage in Texas's Senate race. Here's what Colin Allred's and Ted Cruz's records show. Unlike many Texas Democrats before him, U.S. Representative Colin Allred wants to talk about the border. In particular, he wants to talk about how U.S. Senator Ted Cruz, who he's challenging this November, helped spike major bipartisan border legislation earlier this year. Part of Allred's broader effort to paint Cruz as an obstructionist whose hardline stances have hindered long overdue immigration reform. At the same time, Allred is trying to define his own relatively unknown immigration views before Cruz could do it for him, running ads that call himself tough on the border and embracing a mix of proposals bolstering border security and expanding pathways to legal status. But the notion that Allred is tough on the border is laughable to Cruz, who says his Democratic foe is trying to have it both ways and showing a newfound interest in the topic only now that he's running for statewide office. Cruz, who is also making immigration the linchpin of his campaign, said Allred is papering over a voting record and past comments that show the Dallas Democrat more aligned with President Joe Biden's unpopular border policies than he would have voters believe. With 3.5 months left until Election Day, both candidates are campaigning on border and immigration issues. Allred is running campaign ads that tout headlines about him breaking with his party to condemn Biden, while Cruz laced into the president's policies in a lively speech at the Republican National Convention Tuesday, blaming Biden for several recent high-profile murders allegedly committed by immigrants who entered the country illegally. The border-centric campaigns are a nod to public opinion polls that have repeatedly shown Texas voters ranking immigration and border as their most pressing issues and voicing overwhelming disapproval of Biden's approach, as record numbers of migrants have attempted to enter Texas from Mexico for most of his term. Cruz asked about the attacks on his alleged transigence on the bipartisan immigration package, said he opposed the bill because it was terrible policy that failed to actually secure the border. He said he also helped pass less visible but important border measures, like allowing real-time data sharing between Border Patrol and the Coast Guard, and has seen his own common sense bills get shot down by Democrats. One example, Cruz said, is his proposal to require mandatory minimum prison sentences for those with an aggravated felony conviction who re-entered the country illegally. Over the past decade, I've repeatedly authored and introduced strong border legislation, and Democrats like Allred have repeatedly refused to agree to anything that would actually secure the border, Cruz said in an email to the Texas Tribune. Allred disputed the idea that he has only recently made the border a priority, pointing to his ties to the border city of Brownsville, where his mother is from, and his grandfather worked as a U.S. Customs officer. He acknowledged that too often Democrats have failed to be serious about responding to border crises, though he also pointed the finger at Cruz and other Republicans for Congress's long-running failure to pass a major immigration overhaul. One of my biggest frustrations with Senator Cruz is that he's had 12 years to try and enact any kind of reform, whether it's comprehensive or just targeted, to try and help us do something about what's been happening at the border, and he has every single time refused, Allred said in an interview. Even with his more proactive approach, though, Allred faces an uphill climb, shaking his party's brand among Texas voters who have routinely said they trust Republicans over Democrats on border and immigration matters. Andrew Smith, a political science professor at the University of Texas, Rio Grande Valley, said Allred is walking a tightrope. If he doesn't go through tough enough, if you will, on securing the border, he's not going to get those centrist and moderate voters that are willing to vote against Cruz, Smith said. But if he does get quote-unquote too tough, he risks alienating the younger, more progressive wing of the Democratic Party. Allred's border record. If the Democratic primary earlier this year, Allred's border stance came under fire from the left over his vote for a GOP resolution condemning Biden's open borders policy. Allred's rival in the race, Senator Roland Gutierrez of San Antonio, blasted Allred for throwing Biden under the bus just for political expediency. At the time, Allred said it was a tough vote that he saw as a way to show he did not support the status quo. A spokesperson for Cruz's campaign called the vote cowardly flip-flopping after Allred had consistently voted with his party for reckless border policies that benefited the undocumented while weakening our country and its borders. Hospital, city, county coming together to provide fire EMS to county. In what officials hailed as an historic and monumental occasion, the Ector County Hospital District Board, Odessa City Council, and Ector County Commissioners approved an agreement to provide enhanced fire and emergency medical services to unincorporated areas of the county. The meeting was held in the Genevieve and Larry Melton Conference Center on the campus of Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center. The Memorandum of Understanding was approved by all three entities, and the city signed a letter of intent to update its Memorandum of Understanding with Ector County. Officials said this is just the first step in a long process. Hospital Board President Wallace Dunn said, "The biggest thing they need from the residents of Ector County is to vote in the November 5th election. Once the voters approve it, it will go to the state legislature. So the very earliest they are looking at start implementing the agreement is 2026, Dunn said. He added that they did explore other alternatives before settling on this one. Medical Center Hospital President and CEO Russell Tippin said, "The volunteers are an essential part of the plan. The volunteers play a huge role." Odessa City Manager Don Beckmeyer said, "This was a monumental day." Ector County Judge Dustin Fawcett agreed. "Far too many folks are losing their lives out there because they're losing time in that golden hour for cardiac arrest or for falls or for needless incidents that they should not either lose life, limb, property, or anything else for because of not having professional services out there," Fawcett said. The idea got its start about a year ago when officials started having discussions with people in the unincorporated areas of the county. Dunn said for many years, people have said they would like to see greater collaboration among local government agencies. Community leaders also have asked for collaborative relationships between local hospitals. The city will see a tax decrease of about 14 cents per $100 valuation, and Ector County Hospital District taxes will increase by 8 cents per $100 valuation. Tippin said the hospital district's effective tax rate is 8 cents per $100 valuation, which generates $22 million. The hospital district also currently gets about $50 million in sales tax. They are at 3/4 of a cent for sales tax, and a quarter of that goes to economic development, so they wind up with half a cent. The city's current tax rate is 0.4837.91 per $100 valuation. Beckmeyer said the best estimate of how much it's costing the city to provide fire and EMS to the unincorporated areas is $9 million to $15 million, depending on the year and what goes on. The city will need more personnel and equipment, Beckmeyer acknowledged. The hospital district will collect and appropriate the funds, and will not run the fire and EMS services, Tippin said. City residents will benefit from a tax reduction. County residents will gain improved fire and EMS services through increased funding, according to information from the hospital district. With the tax change, Ector County Hospital District will contribute to the fire and EMS funding. Fawcett said, depending on the year, about 25 to 30% of OFR runs are taking place in the unincorporated areas. Fawcett said he had discussions with people in the county about providing services out there. This was something that was one of the main topics that I discussed with them at all times, because everybody knew somebody who had lost a loved one in an emergency that oftentimes could have changed if they had a permanent station out there, Fawcett said. Our volunteers do an amazing job. OFR responds as quickly as legally possible to be there, but sometimes geography is geography, and that's just the nature of the beast. The support is overwhelming, in my opinion, from the folks that I've talked to. They have concerns, but whenever we talked about this as a basic function of government that is falling through the cracks because we don't have an organization in charge of this, and we haven't had the relationship conversation with taxpayers that this is something that must be done. Fawcett noted that this could bring residences, owners, homeowners insurance down. Tippin said they will meet with people in the community and speak at civic groups, but residents can also call the hospital with any questions. West Texas Centers names Rodney Jones new CEO. Big Spring. West Texas Centers Deputy Executive Officer Rodney Jones was named Monday as the new Chief Executive Officer for West Texas Centers, the agency that provides community behavioral health services and care for people living with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Rodney succeeds longtime West Texas Centers CEO Shelley Smith, who retired July 12th after nearly 40 years at the helm of the agency. Jones, a longtime employee, was announced as the new CEO in a formal announcement with West Texas Centers Chairman Van L. York. In his letter of announcement, York wrote, "After careful consideration and evaluation, we are thrilled to announce the hiring of Rodney Jones to the position of CEO effective July 15, 2024. Rodney has been an integral part of our organization since its inception, and his dedication and contributions have been invaluable. Rodney has served in many different capacities, including deputy CEO for the past 5 years. His deep understanding of our center, combined with his strategic vision and leadership skills, make him the ideal candidate to lead us forward. During his tenure, Rodney has demonstrated a commitment to West Texas Centers through his many achievements and initiatives he has championed. His passion for our West Texas Centers mission, vision, and values is evident in everything he does." Jones said he plans to carry on the strong beliefs and work ethic blazed by Smith, his longtime mentor. "I look forward to continuing in the same selfless manner carved out by Shelley and the WTC team. I have worked alongside her for many years and will continue to follow the strong leadership and vision that she provided. I look forward to providing a high level of care for our customers and their families and being a supportive leader to our dedicated staff." Jones served as deputy CEO for the past 5 years, and prior to that position, he served in several positions, including chief developmental health officer. "My heart and my conscience have always been with our consumers and providing the best possible lives for them. I have a dedicated staff, and I'm looking forward to getting out and visiting with them one-on-one during this transition. They are instrumental in carrying out our mission, and I want to hear from them and learn from them." West Texas Centers employs close to 300 employees who provide care for 2,200 people a month with mental health and intellectual and developmental disabilities in 23 counties in rural West Texas. West Texas Centers also offers the Little Lives Early Childhood Intervention Program based in Sweetwater. Counties served by West Texas Centers are Andrews, Borden, Crane, Dawson, Fisher, Gaines, Garza, Glasscock, Howard, Kent, Loving, Martin, Mitchell, Nolan, Reeves, Reynolds, Scurry, Terrell, Terry, Upton, Ward, Winkler, and Yoakum.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.